Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, January 19, 2017. A senior U.S. official visiting Juba says the national dialogue will help restore peace if it includes everyone.
Inclusive means including everyone who can contribute to peace. And the government has to define that working with all the partners. Civil society needs to be there. The churches need to be there. All of the parties to the conflict need to be there.
And the former commissioner of Yei says violence in the area has destroyed trade and security.
People are suffering. People have lost houses. People have lost work. People have lost food. Livelihood has almost come to stand still, and people in the refuge for fear of their lives.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top U.S. official says the national dialogue recently announced by President Salva Kiir must involve all citizens if it is to achieve peace in South Sudan. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Linda Thomas-Greenfell made remarks yesterday at a press conference in Juba following her visit to South Sudan. Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield was in South Sudan to talk with U.S. government staff, aid workers and government officials about humanitarian access and the transition of power in the U.S. Thomas-Greenfield says she's disappointed she was unable to meet with any South Sudanese government official during her time in Juba. Had she met with them, Thomas-Greenfield says she would have urged the Kiir administration to move forward with the national dialogue announced late last year, saying it would help restore peace in South Sudan, but only if it's inclusive.
Inclusive means including everyone who can contribute to peace. And the government has to define that working with all the partners. Civil society needs to be there. The churches need to be there. All of the parties to the conflict need to be there. And ordinary people need to be part of this process. It has to be fully inclusive, and it has to be one in which people feel confidence in the process. So it's not just the process that is being controlled by the government, but it's an open process that everyone who's participating in makes some contribution to how it will be organized and what the results will be.
A process that is not just controlled by the government, Thomas-Greenfield says. She says another issue she had wanted to discuss with the president is the deployment of a 4,000-strong regional protection force approved by the United Nations Security Council last year. She says she has heard that thousands of South Sudanese continue to flee to neighboring countries because they have no confidence in the country's security. She says she believes the regional protection force will give people enough confidence that they are willing to stay and contribute to the dialogue the president announced.
I've seen several announcements and statements by senior officials that troubled us about the government's willingness to permit the deployment and operation of the Regional Protection Force, and we think that that protection force is critical. It has two main tasks: to create an enabling environment for implementation of the peace agreement and to promote safe and free movement in and out of Juba, including through Equatoria. It will provide confidence to the people in Juba for their security.
Thomas-Greenfield says she wants the government to take action on the findings of a report on last year's July Terrain Hotel attack, in which government forces sexually assaulted several aid workers and killed a South Sudanese journalist. Thomas-Greenfield dismissed as ridiculous recent allegations by a South Sudanese official that the U.S. and other countries were planning a regime change in South Sudan.
I will make every effort to encourage the government to understand that the U.S. government is a partner to the people of South Sudan. We always have been, and we always will be. We are committed to finding a peaceful solution in this country, and we're committed to working with anyone in the country who is for peace. And any stories otherwise are totally false and totally untrue.
Regarding South Sudan's economic crisis, Thomas Greenfield says business owners will only invest in South Sudan when the country's leaders restore peace and stability across the country.
It is important for financial institutions to feel that any investments that they make in a country they have confidence in their investments. And as long as this country is in a state of conflict, it will be hard to get that kind of large investments for infrastructure, for example, the kinds of investment that will help this country develop and strengthen its economy.
Thomas Greenfield says during her visit, she spoke to U.S. embassy officials about last year's attacks in Juba.
We've had a number of South Sudanese employees who have been killed in criminal actions, and we had an American employee who had a heart attack just before Christmas. So the staff is under tremendous stress and mourning, and as their assistant secretary, I thought it was important that I come to console them and be with them.
Ambassador Thomas Greenfield is a member of the Career Foreign Service and has served as the Assistant Secretary for the Bureau of African Affairs since 2013. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
A former commissioner of Yei County in the former Central Equatoria State paints a bleak picture of the situation in Yei, one of the towns hardest hit by fighting between government troops and armed youth. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
David Juma Augustine, who also served as former Central Equatoria State's Minister of Finance and Chairman of the Human Rights Commission, says Yei has turned into a ghost town. He says tens of thousands of residents have fled to neighboring countries due to the deteriorating security and lack of food. Augustine says security forces instill fear by routinely harassing and even killing unarmed civilians. He says basic services have all but collapsed.
People are suffering. People have lost houses. People have lost work. People have lost food. Livelihood has almost come to stand still. And people in the refuge for fear of their lives.
Augustine says he has also heard reports of soldiers or militias rampaging through Yei and plundering villages.
There are reported cases of gross violation of human rights committed by individuals, whether among the armed groups or the uniformed government forces.
The conflict has severely curtailed Yei's agricultural output, which was once referred to as the breadbasket of South Sudan. Augustine says it has also destroyed the state's educational institutions and health facilities.
The productivity of the people of Yei has actually been shut down. The people of Yei are agricultural people. Now they cannot produce anymore. Number two, institutions of learning. The children that Yei is known for, one of the areas in South Sudan that used to have better standard of education. But today, is it the case? It's not the case. The children cannot again access their schools the way they used to. And it's very unfortunate. This is a big destruction to a generation. Talk about the health services. People die of simple diseases today simply because they cannot access services anymore just because war is around Yei.
And Augustine says traders have given up working in Yei either because their business was looted or the money they earned has lost nearly all its value. The former commissioner says Yei is effectively under a reign of terror.
The killings of innocent civilians, the unlawful arrest, what we call arbitrary arrest, and beatings of young men, this border boys, and labeling everybody a rebel. You see, these are common practices.
Augustine says he has personally been threatened and falsely accused of supporting rebels loyal to Machar.
I read an issue in the media one time about my name being put number one as the chief mobilizer of rebels in the whole of West Nile region. And this was written by the governor of Yei River State to the security agencies in Uganda.
Yei River State Governor David Lokonga Moses says the areas are relatively calm because his government has taken security measures to restore peace. He says those measures include arresting and punishing those members of the security forces found to be looting or harassing civilians. Governor Lokonga says in order to restore peace in the area, he has formed a committee which includes religious and community leaders, among others, to talk to the armed groups in the area. Augustine says despite the current appalling conditions in parts of South Sudan, he is hopeful peace and stability can be restored in the country. But in order for that to happen, he says, South Sudan's leaders must put the interests of the people and country first. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
Local leaders and women rights activists in Imatong State Capital Torit say security operatives are arresting and detaining people for days, oftentimes without charges. Dozens of politicians, rights activists, and authorities are among those gathered in Torit to talk about access to justice in South Sudan. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Torit.
South Sudan Law Society officials say most citizens are not familiar with South Sudan's laws, which makes it difficult for them to access justice. They say South Sudanese often suffer arbitrary arrest and long detentions without being charged, and once people are released, they usually do not initiate appeals for justice. Loki Stephen Otome, the chairperson of an Imotong State Youth Group, says educating the population on their rights will ensure that citizens across the state are treated with the respect they deserve by authorities.
Some people can be denied because they do not know how to go and complain for their rights. But through these workshops, the rest of the youth will come to know that wherever they are, they can be assisted. Their rights can be respected through the laws. You know, when someone is arrested or put in prison for a number of days without access to justice, then that is a denial of someone's right.
Ross Lachimi is the head of the Torit Women's Association. Lachimi says law enforcement agencies should consider the injustices women face by local leaders who enforce customary laws.
Your husband passed away, you find the family of your husband, someone will come and force you to stay with you, and you don't have that love. Secondly, there is another one. If your husband is rich and is having a lot of properties, you find the brothers of your husband, usually you will come and take all those properties, even the land. As a woman, you will not have that priority to take even one. Even the children, they will just abandon you. Sometimes with the children, you will be alone there. They will not even bother about the children of the late. As I'm representing women, I'm talking to our fellow men. Please, my people, you stop those kind of things.
Gaspar Amule is a legal aid attorney with the South Sudan Law Society.
Objectives of the workshop is mainly to create an awareness about human rights and the laws that protect human rights in South Sudan, but also to find what are the challenges related to enjoyment of human rights in our community in Torit, to discuss about security concerns in our community, for us to understand what are the security concerns in our community and how can we actually address those concerns.
Fermo Peter Isara is the Torit County Commissioner, is speaking in Arabic. Isara says there is a great vacuum of Imotong state as a whole in about my human rights and kasma, the South Sudan's laws. Fina sasa. Major Jeremiah Fadiri Otoriang is the chief inspector of police in Imotong State. Otoriang applauds the South Sudan Law Society for organizing the workshop, saying police officers also need to be educated on how to enforce national and international laws.
To carry on our mandate concerning human rights, even in laws, to be implemented on a good way. I think our people, through awareness, will keep on and implement this whole human rights law. Also, everybody has to know there is a law and there is a human rights, and respect it.
Residents who live in rural areas are especially vulnerable to human rights violations because of the distance involved in reaching the courts of law for their jurisdictions. For VOA News, I'm Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what do experts on U.S.-Africa policy say about the incoming Trump administration? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best gift you've ever received?
My boyfriend gave me a dress, a very good dress. It was yellow in color, you know, I love yellow. So I was very happy. Exactly, it was my birthday, so I felt very happy.
I would say a laptop. Yeah, a laptop. That was a Mac, Apple laptop, yeah. That's the best gift I've ever received.
The best gift I've ever received was a laptop and a Samsung Galaxy Note 4 from my parents. And they were for my graduation party.
So my idol gave me a gift of a shirt and a trouser and a tie, of which I like ties so much. So that is one of the best gifts I've ever received.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. We now turn to Cameroon, where internet connection appeared to have been cut off in the major towns of the country's two English-speaking regions. The action comes as months-long strike by local lawyers and teachers intensifies. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Agbo Gideon owns a shop that provides internet services to students and researchers at the University of Bamenda in the northwest region of Cameroon. He says his suppliers disconnected internet connection to his neighborhood Tuesday.
They are stepping on our rights. They are stepping on the rights of people from using internet because it blocks so many things. There are people whose businesses are based on internet, so it is going to add to the hardship.
The Northwest is one of two English-speaking regions in Cameroon that has seen violent demonstrations and waves of arrests in recent months related to the strike by teachers and lawyers. Those professionals say the government is letting French sideline English in the bilingual country. The strikers have been joined by other interests, some of whom are calling for the English-speaking regions to secede from Cameroon. The government says that is not an option. Mobile phone companies have not issued an official statement about the internet cut-off, but agents have told worried users that the government is threatening to withdraw their licenses should they not suspend internet services to these two regions. For now, no online money transfers and payments can be made. The government has not commented on the internet issue, but in November, the communications minister warned a blackout was a possibility if social media was used to disseminate what he called anti-government propaganda related to the strike. Authorities have been sending out warnings this week via SMS, which Libom Lilikeng, Cameroon's Minister of Posts and Telecommunications, says are part of a civic education campaign.
Ces messages font partie de la campagne de sensibilisation.
She says social media has become an important communication instrument, which unfortunately is used by people with evil intentions to propagate false information to threaten the public and create panic. She says the president ordered them to pass the message that the irresponsible use of social media is punishable by the law. She says prison time of up to 2 years and fines of up to $4,000 or both await offenders as per Cameroon's penal code. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
While there is still a lot of uncertainty about U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's official policy on Africa, a panel at American University in Washington Wednesday night said there is no doubt that a strong and stable Africa is in America's best interest and that the Trump administration should allow measures and policies made under the past two administrations that showed progress to continue. Ayen Bure has more from Washington.
By this time tomorrow, Donald J. Trump will be sworn in as the 45th president of the United States, a reality that has triggered strong reaction and opinions both in the U.S. and abroad. Trump's policy on Africa remains unclear, but Carla Vaughn, a professor at American University School of International Service, says a country like Gambia, which is undergoing big changes after longtime President Yahya Jammeh refused to cede power after losing last month's election to rival Adama Barrow, demand immediate attention from the incoming administration. He says the same is true for South Sudan.
You know, the conflict in South Sudan is certainly something that is really, really going to require high-level attention. I think he's also going to have to figure out where the fight against the LRA fits in into his priorities. That, you know, became important. And I think in general, he's going to have to figure out where he stands with, you know, the Kagames and Mugabes and the Musevenis of the continent. And if he treats them the same way that he has embraced Putin, then, you know, again, I think that struggles for, you know, democracy will have some wind taken out of their sails.
Sylvester O'Care, liaison to the African diaspora at the Democratic National Committee, which oversees matters of the Democratic Party regarding Africa, says he is hopeful that President-elect Trump, who is seen by many as a successful businessman, will focus on helping Africans expand their own business ventures.
So if Trump is going to pour into business, which is economic growth, that will help Africans also to create jobs for their community. But he has to know who he is engaging with. It doesn't have to be those leaders whom, when you give them, one person becomes a billionaire in a country that are millions of people. So we want to make sure there is an inclusiveness in what he is doing. So I advise him to pay attention and make sure that Africa is a very important component of his administration.
Professor Claire Matalitz, a lecturer at the School of International Service at American University, says each country varies in geography, size, and population, and any future policy on the continent will have to be on a case-by-case basis.
Every place is very complicated, very dynamic, always changing. But I think the new administration, the teams need to work with and go to the people who have been doing this for a while within its own house, so to speak.
Levon cautions against undoing years of progress in Africa by dismantling certain programs. Programs like the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, President Barack Obama's Mandela Washington Fellows, an educational program that brings young Africans to the U.S. for study, and PEPFAR, the president's emergency program for AIDS relief. Levon points out all these programs have received praise and support from Democrats and Republicans alike.
I mean, one of the things that happens when you create something in Washington, in the government, is that not only does it become difficult to destroy, but there are also constituencies around these organizations that support their work and that maybe benefit from their work. That's especially true with AGOA, I think, being a really good example of that.
President-elect Trump sent out a tweet this morning alerting his followers that he is on his way to Washington to begin what he calls a great journey for the American people. Ayen Bior, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudanese are expecting a lot of help from the new Trump administration. South Sudan in Focus asks some South Sudanese in various locations what they would like to see President-elect Trump do for South Sudan in the next 4 years.
President Trump, I need him to give us peace because here in South Sudan we don't have peace. Yeah, and also we need education.
For me, what I want for President to help us is health, because we are lacking of doctors in our country. People are suffering from many diseases and we don't have treatment. So that is what I want.
I want him to help us with the infrastructure because this would help us get things easily here and for transportation and everything else.
I would like Donald J. Trump
to bring peace to South Sudan, to work hard to make sure that there is peace in South Sudan so that we have prosperity and development and stability in our country.
We really want the elect president of the United States of America, Donald Trump, to discourage and completely abstain himself from supporting rebels within any democratic government.
As a South Sudanese, I need a president of USA, Donald Trump, to work very hard to support South Sudan for peace. We just need to be in peace. As South Sudan, being at the wartime for all this time, we need to have a peace in our country.
My name is Isaac Burdeng in Juba. With respect to the inauguration of the President of the United States, there is nothing much which is known about him as a policy towards South Sudan. And even towards the whole of Africa, there is nothing known about his policy. But one thing is very clear, that he is somebody we do not know what his policies are exactly. But one thing is clear, is that he is not going to be just business again as usual all over the world in many things, in his foreign policy, in his policy within the United States with respect to refugees going to the United States. And there are so many of them going from here, many, many people going from South Sudan to America. It is not known how they will react. But business is not going to be the same as it used to be. So we do not expect surprises.
I'm called Zaitun Rogota from South Sudan, Juba. The U.S. president, we believe, is the president of the world. And as he's inaugurated tomorrow, we ask him to be humble enough to look into the issue of South Sudan. South Sudan has been in instability for so long, and people are tired. People have suffered enough. Very many lives have been lost, and the suffering is still continuing. We ask the president of USA, that is Donald Trump, to really look into the issue of South Sudan to ensure that lasting peace comes into the country. We don't mind of whichever means he's going to use, but we need peace in the country. People have suffered enough. It's time for people to develop the country, to enjoy also, just like any other citizens of other countries in the world.
My name is Gadwich in South Sudan. We believe and we hope that if Donald Trump is going to take over tomorrow, maybe he will work very hard in order to bring peace to the people of Africa, to the people of the world, in particular for the people of South Sudan. People of South Sudan has been suffering for almost now 4 years, and actually they are looking for peace. And the peace has been negotiated, and after now we have never seen any fruit of peace. We hopefully that Trump may work hard in order to bring peace to people of South Sudan.
I'm a citizen of South Sudan. Let me hope Trump will bring improvement to South Sudanese citizens, especially concerning the issue of peace. We need peace to be implemented in our country. South Sudan, that's the major issue, because currently citizens in South Sudan, they are really suffering. People are dying, many things are happening, and we need him to bring something good in our country, South Sudan.
I'm Johanna Philip, University of Juba. Inauguration of Trump, for me personally, it doesn't mean a lot, because we know that USA as a country has a set policy that each and every person has to follow. So it's a system. We don't expect much change. But for us as South Sudanese, what we really expect is that he should pay attention to South Sudan crisis and at least try to work hard and bring peace in South Sudan. We have seen things scattered all over. We don't know where to begin from and where to end. And even the stakeholders are like reluctant to help South Sudan. But we hope that there will be a change, at least in the, as the system changes in the U.S. We expect that that should also be reflected in South Sudan.
These are voices of South Sudanese expressing their thoughts about President-elect Donald J. Trump. We thank reporters Santino Monut, Dimo Silva, and Michael Atit for collecting that audio from Warab, Juba, and Torit. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.